This is Always Be a Big Deal Podcast. This week on Always Be a Big Deal, we have the review of Quiet on Set. A review of the May 7th Apple event. And now, please welcome your host, Clay Phoenix and Jessica Vendetta. Welcome to an all-new episode of Always Be a Big Deal Podcast. Let's kick off our Quiet on Set conversation, starting with episode 2. If you would like, you can go back and listen to episode 1 on the very first episode of Chasing Fruit Flies, now on our RSS feed. So this episode, episode 2 of season 1, is called Hidden in Plain Sight. And the synopsis reads, Dan Schneider's relationship with his star Amanda Bynes hits a breaking point as new child actors confront uncomfortable scenes and power dynamics. Until they face a startling revelation that two of their new members prey on kids they met on set. This conversation is about Quiet on Set. And this series investigates the abuse experienced by children from the adults they were expected to trust. Listener discretion is advised. Jason Handy is the on-set guy that is arrested for child abuse. So he is sought out to be accused of molesting the children on the set.
Yes.
Then they go into Brandy's story. This got me emotional. Just hearing her mom speak was very, very, very touching.
Yeah, I know.
Jason sent nudes to her.
Yes.
And she was like so excited just to have a friend in the industry.
And I think like he was older and like she probably had like a bit of a crush on him, but didn't expect that.
Yeah. And so like, and like her age was like one of those things when you start going, like it's at that age of like, you know, you start going through puberty and things like that. So your body is changing. So you're trying to figure out your body as well as the feelings that you're getting with all of those hormone changes.
And I feel like she was groomed a very long time before she got that.
Elaborate on that.
Like he put in a lot of work sending her emails all the time, like friendly emails, and just acted like he was her friend. And I just remember when her mom was describing it, like it was a very long time because like she would like kind of check in on it. But then I think she kind of let it go because it looked safe. So she even said like, you know, everything seemed okay. So I kind of just let it go because she was just so excited to talk to someone in the industry and hopefully could get her in, you know, because, you know, you want your kids to be happy. So and I think about like my kids and like if they were younger and wanted to be famous, like I probably would have done the same thing. Like, you know, I would have monitored it, but like once you think they're okay, then, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, he just kind of hit her with it. And I guess he didn't expect her to tell her mom, is what I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why it didn't go further than what it did, thank goodness. But her life is affected. Like forever. It's always her mom. Like think about how guilty her mom feels. It's horrible. And these men just keep, our women, not just men, this in this episode it was men. They just keep living their life like, like nothing. Like it's crazy to me that that's okay. Our world is crazy.
Even Brandy's mom had mentioned that she had felt uncomfortable and there was something off about it. And she just kind of didn't want to really say anything because she didn't want to ruin her child's chances of getting another job or being in that industry. I mean, I would still rather my child hate me than them be hurt, in my opinion.
Absolutely. But like in the moment, you don't think about that. You just want, you see an opportunity and you see something your kid wants. So, I mean, with everything we know now in the world, I think it would bring up a lot of, like, if my kids were younger, just because everything we know, I feel like, I hope that I would see the red flags easier. But these men, like, really know what they're doing to get in these people. Like, they just, I don't even know. They just find their target and, like, they just fall into it. Like, it's, especially because that's why they go for the younger ones, because they're kids and they're easily influenced and, you know, and it's just, it just makes me so sad that anyone had to deal with that.
So also with Dan and the whole what I like about you thing was disturbing, that you're then going to follow Amanda so far as to make a show for her as she starts to venture into adulthood. And this show was even pushing a boundary and a line. Then you have this rumor where you're asked to not be on set anymore. So you go back to Nickelodeon and rebrand all that.
And I still wonder about that relationship. Like, I don't think it was sexual, but I feel like he had, I almost feel like he just felt like he owned her, kind of like he created her. But it's, the thing is, she's still a person and she's still her own person. Like, just because you help someone get somewhere in the career, it doesn't mean you own them.
The crazy part about that is there's a lot of conspiracy theories online about the whole Jamie Lynn Spears pregnancy, about Amanda Bynes' abortion at that time. So there's a lot of, like, interesting things when you start to go down a rabbit hole that almost makes you think even more, like, what was the bigger picture? What happened that they're not letting on to? Amanda Bynes never spoke. Jamie Lynn never spoke. Still haven't spoke. So is there something that did happen and they just haven't spoke up about it? And another thing is was it in the NDA? Was there a line in the NDA that their legal team says you can't say anything about it because of this line in your NDA?
Yeah, I mean, it very well could be, because I definitely think there's a lot of unspoken thing, because, like, some things just do not add up. The things we've seen in the media before we even watch Quiet on the Set. Like, there's always like, especially with, like, Amanda Bynes, I've, like, when she first kind of went crazy or whatever in the media, like, I didn't even believe it, just because, you know, the media always says this, that, or the other. But then, like, you saw pictures of her and it was just like, and I just assumed it was like the acting got to her, not the acting, but the whole lifestyle. I mean, that's, but how naive am I that that's what I thought, you know? And this was when I was younger, but still, like,
just something that you kind of got used to after a while with child stars is they just kind of go off the deep end and, oh, there's the child star doing that again.
That's very true. Yeah. Like, look at Corey Haim. Like, yeah.
Who?
Corey Haim.
Who'd that be?
I knew that you were gonna know what it was. He was in a lot of movies, like, from the 80s. I'm trying to think of, I can't even think of him. But he was a child star that kind of lost it. He was,
thank God for Google.
Seriously, though.
So Corey Haim was most famous for The Lost Boys, Lucas, Crank, High Voltage, and License to Drive. Corey Feldman is most famous for Stand By Me, The Goonies, The Burbs, and The Lost Boys.
You know what? I thought he was in a lot of more movies that I watched. I don't think I watched any of
these. He's been in a lot of movies.
No, he's definitely in a lot of movies, but I'm looking at them and I think I've seen two. But I don't know why, but I was, like, in love with him. They also were abused, sexually abused. Like, there's documentaries and stuff on both Coreys. I don't know if they're abused by the same person or anything, but they did a lot of movies together. I think they just kind of went off because they're both, their names are Corey. Like, I don't know why they did movies together, but they did. Dream a Little Dream. That's the movie I know. I love that movie.
So next is Quiet on Set, Season 1, Episode 3, The Darkest Secret. And at the end of Episode 2, they introduced John Doe, the child that was in the case that nobody knew who it was, and it ended up being Drake Bell. So therefore, the synopsis reads, a former child star reveals how he survived abuse at the hands of his acting coach. The harrowing account traces how he met his abuser on set, the ways his coach upended the child family, and the challenges faced when the actor sought out police. At the time of Drake coming out about his molestation and them keeping it a secret because he was underage, they premiered Drake and Josh in January of 2004. And then the court date was in October of 2004. So it was all in the same year and a lot happened, but it never became a huge scandal. Nobody outside of the case or didn't have anything to do with the case didn't know about the case.
No, I don't remember hearing about it.
Yeah. And like Drake admits that he had never told a story publicly until Quiet on Set.
I think because all the stuff he went through, like in his own life, I think he kind of felt like he had to. Not to make excuses, but just kind of be like, hey, this is what's happened to me. Like,
and he never made an excuse. He always said that I made the mistakes that I made and that is on me and I'm going to take credit for it. But I want people to take credit for what they did to me.
Yeah. And I think that's more than fair.
Yeah, it is. Very fair. The thing that I found interesting about Brian Peck was the thing that Brian Peck was also on Growing Pains with Leonardo DiCaprio, and he was very touchy-feely with him. Leo's never said anything. Leo's never spoken up about it. So there's no evidence on that.
Yeah, but I was actually thinking the same thing because he was also a very big star. I mean, he wasn't like when he was on Growing Pains, but I'm saying like, I wonder if something happened and he just squashed, you know what I mean? And I get that. It's your business. So because it might have affected him.
Yeah, it did very much affect him.
Yeah.
And the level of craziness with this whole entire story. Brian Peck having this with Drake had started to affect his dad because his dad could see it.
Yes.
And when he finally opened up to his dad about it, it really hit him very hard because he knew something was going on. He wanted to try to save him.
Yes.
And Brian manipulated his dad and his mom, and his mom then became the guardian of him on set.
He messed with Drake's mind. Like, you need your dad anymore, even though his dad was with him like the whole time, you know, which I get, he's a kid. He doesn't know, you know, listening to this guy that he thinks is going to help him make him famous or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Whenever Drake and his dad were talking about that part and the part that like they, you know, they found out that Brock had molested someone and his dad was like, oh, thank goodness it was you. That broke my heart because at that time, Drake still didn't tell dad.
Yeah.
He didn't know. So he really thought, oh, thank goodness his son wasn't one of them. Like, I can't even imagine the grief that he felt. He already suspected something, tried to speak up. Brian Peck saw that, cut ties with his dad and Drake, you know, and he got exactly what he wanted.
Yeah. And so the line that Drake says that was like mind blowing was it just kept happening and he couldn't get out.
Yes.
On the flip side, his girlfriend's mom is the one that figured it out.
Yeah, because she's like, why is this girl blowing up your phone and my phone? Like, huge red flag.
Became obsessed over him.
I think Drake was trying to get out of it, no idea where to even start.
And then Brian was trying to get Drake to convince Dan to let him play the dad on Drake and Josh.
Ugh. Yes.
And then finally one day he just explodes and tells his mom everything. Episode 4 is Too Close to the Sun. Synopsis. An abuser goes to jail, but gets support from big names in Hollywood. Meanwhile, Dan Schneider's power at the network grows, raising questions about the content and his treatment of the cast and crew. Eventually, tensions boil over. So, October 2004, Brian Peck is sentenced in Van Nuys, California for child sex abuse. Drake was a minor at the time, so therefore he was known as John Doe, and a majority of the court records were sealed. But when they did this documentary, they petitioned to get them unsealed. And the interesting thing is that when they unsealed the documents, they found that there was a lot of big name artists that were on Brian's side.
Yes. When he walked into the courtroom, like Brian's side was filled with support. I mean, at that time he was like young. I mean, he was a teenager. Like, just imagine like this horrible thing happens to you. You walk in, some of them are probably his colleagues and they're all there supporting the man that did this to you. Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And then, so he gets convicted after Hollywood blames the victim. And then Brian ends up on Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. That is a Disney show.
Crazy. Like, was his record sealed? I don't get that.
So what I think it is that they had touched on the fact that they were not doing background checks on people that worked on kids shows prior to now. They will do it now, but back then they were not.
And no one knew like what he did because everything was sealed.
And it wasn't really publicized either. So it's not like,
Yeah.
So it's not like they were like, oh, this happened, this, that, and third, and it was a minor, so we can't release his name. None of that was out. It was pretty much kept hush hush. So three predators before Nickelodeon decided to change their background check policy for freelancers.
Yes, and that's three we know of.
Then they start to get into iCarly, Zoe 101, those later shows that Dan had did. Speaking about episode one, I had mentioned that iCarly just had a reboot. So Dan Schneider is just listed as the creator because he originally created the original concept. Miranda Cosgrove is the one that produced it.
Oh, okay.
So she's the one that she's the one that recreated it for the spinoff.
So he has no part in it, right? Except for he created iCarly's only thing. Okay.
Yeah. He's just listed because he was the original concept creator.
Okay. Makes sense.
Which that's legal jargon. They have to do it. Jeanette McCurdy writes her memoir and it's titled I'm Glad My Mom Died.
Yes.
Which is so ballsy. And I love her for doing that because she had such a crazy relationship with her mom. And the title really catches your attention.
It does.
And there's people that have literally read that memoir and have no clue who Jeanette McCurdy is.
She was very smart in naming it that.
Very, very smart. And they give her a lot of crap for it, but I think she was very intelligent for naming it that.
She was one of the first ones to kind of speak up and people thought she was crazy.
Yeah. And so in the book, she talks about onset life and she says the creator. So she coins this character, the creator, doesn't use an exact name, but people had started to question if it was Dan. They did not fully question it until this documentary came out and pieces started falling together. And then 2017, the Me Too movement happened and people started to feel even more free about speaking up. And that's when we started to learn about all of these different shows and the things that had happened behind the scenes. It's rumored that Nickelodeon opens a second investigation on Dan and they end up paying him $7 million to leave the network.
Oh my gosh. But why did they have to pay him off?
I guess it was a contract dispute or agreement or something that they had to pay out the rest of the contract to get him to leave.
That's crazy. He got to do all that and get paid $7 million to leave.
But if you ask Dan, that never happened. All this comes out, it kind of makes Amanda Bynes' story make a lot more sense.
Like, it makes me really think, like, we need to listen to our kids. Even though, like, they may have been adults when they come out with this stuff, but we need to listen and stop thinking they're just making it up for this, that, or the other. Like, to me, like, everyone should be heard, not, like, slashed in the media because of it. Oh, she just went crazy. I mean, it couldn't be that some man was, like, behind all of it or a woman, you know, getting in these kids' minds. Like, it could never be that. It's got to be the kids' problem.
Yeah.
Because that's easier to brush under the rug, in my opinion.
One last thing that I find very intriguing. Dan had Boogie from one of the shows, I want to say it was on iCarly, come in and interview him for an apology. And the thing about this, the thing about the interview with Boogie was that he questioned him about being racist. And Dan said, well, I made one of the biggest shows and it had two lead black actors.
Yeah.
Which is textbook, I'm racist. Repeat that.
I said, it's like he did that on purpose so that later, if he was questioned, he could be like, well, look what I did.
Yes. And that whole interview just kind of, it wasn't an apology. It was just him blaming everybody else except for himself.
Yes. And it's funny, but when I watched it, I believed him because I'm an idiot. I didn't believe everything, but I believed that some of it, I believed that he was sorry. I mean, I still think it's all true. Don't get me wrong, but we just had different opinions on it. But I'm also very naive, so.
Well, I don't think that it was that he was sorry for what happened. He was sorry for getting caught in what happened.
Yes, I do get that too, because I feel like the person that interviewed him, I don't know if they like stayed close friends, but I felt like he was very, very team him. You know what I mean? Like, and that's fine. But like, I would have liked to see maybe someone else that was in the documentary interview him. I think that would have been better.
Any other thoughts on Quiet on Set?
I don't think so. It's very, not interesting, I don't want to say it's interesting, mind-blowing to watch. Think about these shows that and what these kids went through.
I don't think you can take away the word fascinating, though, like, or interesting, because it was. Those words, like, you're not making it a negative connotation by using those words, because there was an interesting aspect about it, because we grew up watching these shows, and we never would have thought that that was going on.
Never.
And what's interesting too is like, so with all of like all of this, like I feel like I kind of like fell into this and was like, oh my gosh, I want to know more about it. Where other people around me are like, this means nothing to me. I have no clue what this show is. I have no clue who Drake Bell is.
Yes.
So it's, you just see those two different sides of the coin where like people are like, I don't know who that is, so I'm not going to bother with it. It's not going to affect me. And then there's other people that are like, oh man, that's really interesting and fascinating to me. And I'm going to watch this and figure out more about this because I grew up with these people and watched these people. So Always Be a Big Deal podcast with Clay Phoenix and Jessica Vendetta. Media trend.
Now let's turn our attention to iPad. And today we have some huge updates across the iPad lineup.
So Apple gives us a surprise Apple event. And with this surprise Apple event, they are primarily focused on the iPad. And for starters, the iPad mini and the base model iPad are still available, and they lowered the price on the base model iPad. They revamped and recreated the iPad Air to have more of a look of the iPad Pro and have functionality for that pen still on it, and making it a better screen to bring that in and giving it the M2 chip. The mind-blowing thing of the whole entire surprise Apple event is they bring you this brand new iPad. So the Air is now going to be in two different sizes. iPad Pro will be available in two different sizes, just as well as the iPad Air. The interesting thing about this that blew my mind and has me so hype is the fact that the iPad Pro introduces the M4 chip, and it's the first time that an iPad has introduced a chip. But as they explain in the video, they needed this chip in order to make the iPad Pro the iPad Pro. With the new neural engines and the more capability for AI integration, gaming, and things like that, it really brings this whole new world into the iPad. The new refined Apple Pencil Pro, which now has a squeeze gestures, it has rotating gestures, and you could find it on Find My. That is probably my favorite thing. I literally have two Apple Pencils, and one is still at my house in Stuartstown, never getting that one back. And I have one here that I gave to my daughter. She uses it on my old iPad Pro to draw and stuff. When you lose that, you can't use Find My to find it. It's just lost until you find it. So that's amazing that they added that to it. And the functionality, as the Procreate CEO was talking about, you know, it kind of brings this whole new world because you can adjust your paintbrush or your angle or your drawing utensil just by squeezing or just by rotating it to create beautiful images if you're an artist or if you're using it for CAD or different things like that. The iPad Air 11-inch will start at $599. The iPad Air 13-inch will start at $799 and will be available in space gray, blue, purple, and starlight. The iPad Pro 11-inch will start at $999, and the iPad Pro 13-inch will start at $1,299, and they will be available in silver and space black. The iPad Mini comes in at $499 and is available in space gray, pink, purple, and starlight. The base iPad is $349 and it is available in pink, blue, yellow, and silver. So the iPad Air will be available in 128GB, 256GB, 512GB, and 1TB. So they're adding the 512GB and the 1TB option that was typically just for the iPad Pro model. The Apple Pencil Pro comes in at $129 and the new Magic Keyboard starts at $299.
This is Always Be a Big Deal podcast with Clay Phoenix and Jessica Vendetta.